Let's do this. Okay, so let's take a look at a simple mechanical system. All right, so I have a mass, M. It's rolling along the ground, and my fancy wheels there are basically just to show that there's no friction between the mass and the surface it's sliding on. Right, so this is a perfectly frictionless surface here, what those wheels will signify for us. Right, I'm going to describe the position of this mass as x. And we're going to think about two different forces acting on this mass. So we're going to have a U and an F. And I split these up because what we're going to say that U is our control input. So that's what we're going to have in terms of controlling the system moving around. We get to pick what U is as a function of time, right? And we see that F, we're going to say, is a disturbance force. So it could be that I'm trying to push on this table, and someone else is pushing on the other side and trying to prevent me from pushing on it. It could be that my boat, trying to drive my boat, and there's wind blowing against me, or waves blowing against me. That's a reasonable approximation of that system, actually. Right. So I am trying to write, I'm going to start with system dynamics and controls. I need to write the equations of motion of the things we're thinking about. Right, what would be the first step in writing equations of motion? Anybody? Know what the forces are acting on it. What's that diagram usually called? Free body diagram. So even for, this is a little bit simple maybe, but particularly we're talking mechanical systems, which we'll be talking about mostly throughout the semester, draw the free body diagrams. Right? It's certainly true in vibrations. I imagine it's going to be true in here as well. There's a direct correlation between people that draw free body diagrams and people that get the modeling part of the question right. All right. So take the time, draw the free body diagram. All right. So for us, that's pretty easy, right? That disturbance force, control force. Any other forces on this guy? Gravity. Right. So I have some gravity. What else? Somebody said it? Normal force. All right, so we're going to say for our system that, hey, it's constrained to move horizontally. All right, so basically, it's constrained to move horizontally. We have no motion up or down. So we know that the net force in that direction has to be zero. Right? So N and mg are canceling each other for all time. All right, so we can kind of ignore those terms, basically. All right, so if I'm going to write motion in the x direction, How do I get there? Summation of the forces. Summation of the forces. That's that F equals ma stuff, right? Hopefully that sounds familiar. There's my ma for the system. There we go. Equation of motion for this mass with external forces acting on it. Pretty simple so far. Okay. So let's start out with our discussion for now . Let's let that disturbance force just be zero. We'll come back to it in a little while, and I'll let you know when. Okay, so if that disturbance force is zero, we really just have our control force input. It controls, acts directly on the acceleration of the system. So if we can pick out what U is, we can probably control this thing pretty well. Okay. But we also can write this system, particularly once we start we also write it that way. Right. In this GP, which we're going to see quite a bit of this semester. We say that's the plant in this case, right? And that terminology comes from process control. So a lot of this control technology was initially developed for process control. So we see some of the terminology. Remains, plant. So for us, basically that plant is just some kind of representation of the system, right? So I have some input U, something happens in here and causes some output X, right? So I have input on this side, output on that side. So what we're saying is, hey, I get to pick U, I give U to my plant, to the system I'm trying to control, and then based on what U is, I get some kind of output. In this case, position X. All right. And we can think about GP as the GP kind of transfers the input to the output, right? And I use that terminology because quite often what you see in here is called a transfer function. Okay. And that transfer function just describes the relationship between the output and the input. We'll see those a lot. There's a big chunk of the course on how to figure out the transfer function for a given system. All right. So let's think about our system a little bit. I want to move my mass from wherever it's at to my desired position XD as quickly as possible. How do I do that? Just intuitively, how would I do that?
Increase your control input.
Increase my control input, sure. That's part of it. What else? Change my transfer function. In some cases in the future, yes, we'll be able to do that. In this case, this transfer function is just a property of the mass. So we don't have any control over that transfer function in this particular case. What we have control over is what U is. Right, so really what we're asking is, what does U of T need to be to make this happen?
To optimize U of T.
Optimize U of T. All right. I'm going to say for this system, I know the time optimal point-to-point move right now. And I think some of you probably do too, actually. I'm sitting in my car. I want to get my car moving as fast as possible. What do I do? Slam on the gas, right? Now I want to stop as fast as possible. What do I do?
Slam on the brakes.
Slam on the brakes. All right? That's exactly what we're going to do here. All right? So I'm going to slam on this mass, make U of T as high as I can make it to get up to speed. And then I can judge maybe some distance from where my target is. I'm going to slam on the brakes and try to stop as fast as possible. Right? So I'm going to accelerate, accelerate, accelerate until I need to start stopping. Right? And then I'm going to stop as quickly as I can. Right? So what that command looks like, if you're talking about a force, and we're going to, let's assume in this case, that I have some maximum force I can issue to this system, which is nearly always going to be true. Something that's less true but will make it easier for us right now is to assume that I have the exact opposite maximum in the deceleration. Right. So if I'm going to write maybe this force, and maybe I start, I'm going to put 0 times 0 there, away from the axis a little bit, let us see what's happening. Right. So he said, I want to slam on the gas. I'm going to accelerate as fast as I can. So that means try to instantaneously change that force. Right? And I'm going to keep that force as long as I can. Right? And then I need to slam on the brakes. Right? And when I get to my target, I let off the brakes. There's my force input, U of T. Right. And I'm arguing, and I think you guys, hopefully kind of intuitively getting this, that this is a time optimal point-to-point move for this mass. Right. I can't go any faster than this, given a certain U max. Right. I'm pushing on it as hard as I can, and then stopping it as fast as I can. Right. So what I actually have to pick, I could call that 0. We could also call that T1. If I'm designing this command and trying to move a certain distance, move to XD as quickly as possible, I really have just three things I need to pick out. All right, I need to pick out T1, T2, and T3. What are those times at which I need to start slamming on the gas, and how long do I keep on the gas before I need to slam on the brake? And then, when do I let off the brake? All right. This kind of input has actually a special name. Called a bang bang input. All right, I kind of bang on and then I bang off, bang bang. All right. So let's think about this a little bit. My system here, I had that equation in motion, right? So I know in this case, my equation in motion, I can just rewrite it as that. So I just took and divided both sides by m. How do I get to, this is acceleration of that mass, x. How do I get to its position? I can integrate twice, right? All right. So, how far do I need to get by time T2? I'm trying to move from some position, let's say 0, to XD. Halfway, right? If I assume that I have symmetric limits here, right, I need to have a stopping force that's exactly equal to the acceleration causing force I have. Right? These two areas actually need to be equal if I'm ever going to get to zero velocity. I'm actually going to stop, right? If I accelerate way more than I brake, I'm still going to have some velocity, right?
I just have to brake for longer.
Might have to brake for longer, right? So that's what happens if I have a non-symmetric max here. Yeah, this area still has to be the same. So if I have less braking force, I have to brake for a longer time, right? Assuming we're kind of equal here, symmetric, those areas have to equal, and I'm saying, oh, okay, I can kind of see from this that I have to be halfway there by T2. Right. Everybody see that? Okay. So if I have to be halfway there by T2, that's T2. I know what that function of time has to be by T2, right? And let's see, I'm gonna max. Fine. If I'm gonna do this integral, what is u over this entire interval of that integral? From T1 to T2, what is u? Yeah, it's just u max the whole time. And that's the only reason we split the integral. It's really easy to solve that first half. It's just a constant, right? So, where are we going? That's it, right? T2 squared, not just T. All right. And I know that has to equal. So I can find that T2 is U over M, right? U max over M. Okay. And if we know T2, we know T3 just has to be double that. Alpha. What does this look like to you guys? I have some parameter that's a relationship between the force and the mass. Yeah, it's acceleration. F equals ma. That's all that is. All right, so this basically we have some limit on acceleration, some acceleration ratio kind of thing. All right. So I solve for you. You give me an xd, I know what m is, and u max. We can solve for the time optimal point-to-point move for that system. Okay. What does the velocity look like that results from that force? So I'm going to, let's copy the command over here. Well, let's back up. What should t1 be? We didn't solve for that one yet. T1 should be 0. I want to get there as fast as possible. There's no sense waiting for t1 to be anything other than 0. So in this case, I'm actually going to move 0 over again so we can kind of see the command. And I'll just copy so there's our force. Alright. What's the velocity of this system look like?
Parabolic curve.
I think you're one step ahead of us. Okay, so I'm pushing on this system and I'm trying doing something proportional to acceleration. So I have a constant force, means a constant acceleration. Yeah, it's going to, so over that time, right, so in that bang on period, I'm accelerating to some velocity. Right, so I have a steady increase in velocity until I start braking, then I have a steady decrease in velocity until I stop braking. Okay. Okay. How about the position? So velocity is always increasing up to some point, so it has a maximum slope there, right? This is this curve here represents the slope of the position. Right? So I can just work backwards, and I know that somewhere in the middle here, I should be halfway. There we go. And from 0 to xd as fast as we can go given a particular umax. And this is position. Okay. Questions so far? All right, let's keep trucking. So, let's take a look at this system. Now F of T, that disturbance force, is not 0. All right? So let's maybe plot it in the same just for disturbance. If that disturbance force is not zero, how does that affect our response here? Does all this still work? Not at all, right? So we can imagine maybe have some kind of impulsive force here. Like even a little small one like that, you're really going to throw everything off, right? So in this case, I have this small impulsive force. How's that going to affect the velocity? Do I get back to zero? No, not anymore, right? So if I don't get back to zero velocity anymore, what happens to my position? I deviate more and more from XD as time goes on. I don't have zero velocity anymore. Right. So,
the disturbance force is in the opposite of the direction you want to go. Doesn't that mean your velocity will go to zero sooner and your position will never reach? It'll be below XD.
You will end up with a final position or kind of steady state condition where you're deviating for more or less. That's right. So in this case, we still would, because the pulse is over here, we still would get to the same peak velocity. But yeah, this curve goes down further and actually ends up below zero. Right, so you end up with a negative velocity. So the response starts to trail off like that.
Oh, so your brakes aren't actually brakes. They're just reverse gas.
Yeah, that's what brakes are. Acceleration, deceleration. They're a pair, right? Well, that's creating a force that's decelerating your system, right? So this deceleration pulse is like braking.
But like this kind of braking is actually like...
Well, yeah, our simple representation of the braking is that I'm pushing on this thing as hard as I can, and then to stop it, I have to pull on it as hard as I can.
Oh.
So I'm pushing on it as hard as I can until I get halfway there, and then I start pulling on it to try to stop it. Okay, so all that cool stuff we just did, actually we still use this quite a bit actually. If you have really, really low friction, really small external forces relative to Umax, you can quite often get away with this. So don't just abandon it, but know there are problems. What can I do? Yeah?
Just out of curiosity, so would you possibly want to have, for something like a Kramer stabilizing,
So yeah, I think you don't necessarily need the physical inputs on either side, right? You don't need one here if you're able to control this well in both directions, right? So we could often withdraw it like this because it's neat schematically, but like this U can push or pull. And so for like the crane example, you can drive the crane wheels forward. It's on a gear set usually, or some tracks. You can drive them forward, you can drive them in reverse. Right, but they're, you know, physically you don't need them on kind of opposite sides. Okay. Back to our system now. We have a UT that works in some cases. How else could I choose that force? I'm trying to choose you, right? Remember, our goal is to do this, right? And we ignored the possibility of external disturbances and a few other things, actually, but just worry about disturbances for now. So we ignored the fact of external disturbances, and we came up with an optimal solution, right? And it works pretty well until we have external disturbances, which makes sense. We didn't think about them to design the thing. Right? So is there some other way? Let's try to think about it. To pick you, to pick my force input.
If you know what your disturbance forces are, you can redo the time off equations.
Sure. So if I know this disturbance force really, really well, right, if I know what that pulse is, or I know what my disturbance is going to be in my system, I can redo this whole calculation, including that force as well. And that would be okay. How often do you think we know our disturbance forces really, really well? Almost never. That's right. Right. Almost always, these disturbance forces are going to be unknown and possibly time varying.
So you need to put some sort of tolerance in you.
Some kind of tolerance, sure. That's all you got? Any other ideas?
Have you cover all cases of forces?
Okay, so I can maybe have some kind of lookup table or something that I know this range of forces and I feel a certain force and I can react accordingly. Maybe that's possible.
We're still assuming that U max and U negative max.
Those limits still happen, yeah. So how big does that lookup table get, though, for a general system? Pretty big. Right. So that quite often is going to be memory prohibitive for a lot of systems to store every possible combination of input and disturbance force. That's one way to solve it, sure, is to basically play with this ratio of U max to the disturbance forces you're likely to see. And that's quite off. That's honestly a common solution to this, right? So you look at like the welding robots that build automobiles, right? They're big and heavy and stiff so that they don't vibrate. So I don't have to worry about vibration when I control the thing at all. So it's a mechanical solution to a control design problem. And that's pretty common. Cranes, the state of the art in crane control in factories is just to move really, really slow. So I never excite the vibration either. So I move really, really slow and I have three or four of my buddies come over and hold the thing while I'm moving it. That's state of the art crane control in most factories. So yeah, I can come up with probably, for a given system, mechanical solutions, maybe, to this problem. I think we can do better than that though. I know I want to get to XD. Right? I'm driving, let's say, kind of think about it from the driving perspective. I want to drive from here to the door. If I'm the driver, how do I know when I need to start braking?
You can see the door approaching.
I can see the door approaching, right. So I have some information about where I am relative to my goal. Right? So I'm able to sense and know something about my system. In the case, me in the car, in that example, right? So what I can do is maybe think about, well, maybe this force should have something to do with how far away I am from the target. Does that make sense? So maybe, that's a proportional sign, not an alpha. Or maybe we could write it a different way. So the force is proportional to how far I'm away from my target. Or you could more generally write U as a function of, let's say, xd, x in time. Or f, we get to pick what f is. Right, we get to design that function. How should u change based on the difference between where I am and where I want to be? All right. So, okay. Any ideas? If we're going to maybe go down this path, and I'm suggesting it, and we're talking about it, so maybe it's one to consider.
Okay, so you need information.
I need information, sure. So that is the big downside to this guy, is now I need to start measuring where I'm at all the time. Right, I need to know x for every time instant. For a lot of systems, that's non-trivial, right? Let's just assume we can measure that right now. Right? And we'll talk about this whole semester. That's a big cost to feedback control, is having really precise information about my system. And it's critical to a lot of control systems. If I don't have any confidence in what X is, the whole thing starts falling apart. For now, let's assume I can perfectly measure where I'm at. So what should this function be? Any ideas?
Function of your acceleration.
So yeah, it's probably going to be limited between those two. So yeah, we'll have some maybe nonlinear limits on umax, or at least have to monitor that function and make sure it never exceeds plus or minus umax. How about this idea? Let's just make it proportional to that distance. Right? And what we'll see as we move along the semester, that Kp is going to be called a proportional gain. N is the p part of the PID controller. This is going to be the, one of the core controllers we talk about throughout the semester. Right. So now I have some u that's proportional to my error from where I want to be. Right. What does that response look like, you think? What is, if I'm saying I'm starting from 0, xd is a non-zero number, so I'm going to get some proportional value at time 0, that force spikes, right? Because I'm as far away now as I'm ever going to be, hopefully. Right? So as soon as I start trying to control this thing, I get some peaking force. As I get closer to the target, what happens to the force? It gets smaller. For this system, do I stop on the target?
Stop. No, because if you stop on the target, you're not on the target.
Yeah, because if your u equals 0, let's say x of d, that doesn't mean your velocity equals.
That's right. Exactly right. So what happens here, if we look at the force, we get a big peak at 0. Well, we actually get a sine wave that starts at 0. Right. And the response to that looks like that. So this proportional control by itself doesn't really get us there either. And this is kind of some arbitrary value of p. If I pick p to be bigger, right, this peak goes way up, right? I might get there faster, but I still end up oscillating about the final set point. So what else could I do? So just p is not going to get us there. Just something proportional to the position doesn't get us there. There's pretty plots of this stuff in the notes, so take a look. I'm going to propose another one. I also want to have some kind of control input that's proportional to the rate of change of that error. All right. So we still have this p term. That d, we say, is the derivative term. It's the d part of a PID controller. Right. And happens in that case, one more color. Please do take a look at the notes. I get this spike, but then that d term causes that. And I can get a response that looks something like that. Okay, let's think about that. In our last couple minutes, if I go back over to my equation of motion, and let's substitute this in. Right, this is just u. Does that equation look familiar? What mechanical element creates a force proportional to its distance from its equilibrium?
Is it
A spring, right. This is effectively a spring force that's acting on the air from where I'm at to where I want to be. What mechanical element creates a force proportional to its rate of change of its length? Got it? What's proportional to rate of change of length?
Spring stiff, right?
No, rate of change, dots, velocity. A spring, if I stretch it out, it's still going to want to pull back. This one, if I stretch it out and have zero velocity, it's not creating any force anymore. This is a damper, viscous damper, right? So this looks like a spring, that looks like a viscous damper. So the controller we've designed is mathematically equivalent to that. Mass spring damper system, haven't had vibrations yet. 50% of vibrations is talking about a system that looks just like that. All right. So basically what we have is this mathematical equivalence tells us, right, that, well, I'm just generating some force for this system based on the difference from where I am to where I want to be and its rate of change. This is mathematically equivalent to a PD controller. That's strictly true here. As system gets more complex, this starts to break down a little bit, maybe. But you still use that same intuition, right? A PID controller on a joint of a robot is generating some torque that acts just like a spring and damper between the actual state and the desired state, right? And we can use our knowledge from dynamics and once you take vibrations to help us intuit about what this should be. How can we pick KP and how can we pick KD? And really the kind of core principles we're going to talk about are, as I take some system like this one, and I've designed a proportional controller, we designed a PD controller, right? How do I pick what KP and KD should be? How do I know that I'm going to get this really nice green response with my choice of KP and KD? And the thing that really can cause trouble, if I pick the wrong KP and KD, I don't just get this vibration, I get vibration that grows out to infinity. Right? That's called instability. Right? So a core part of this course is going to be understanding how to write models for systems and then picking the parameters and doing that analysis. Right? And the theoretical underpinnings of how do I make those choices and do that analysis. Okay, questions? Yes, sir.
I'm not sure physically what a damper looks like.
Damper is a shock absorber.
Okay.
Yep. So your shock absorber, a lot of them will have a spring constitute, but if you press it in, it's really only giving force based on how fast you're trying to move it.
Okay.
Right? So that's why you can think about this term. Right? That it's proportional. You try to push on it really quickly, there's a lot of resistance to you. It's generating a lot of force there. If you move it kind of slowly, generally you can move those. Right? So it's proportional to the rate of change of its length. Right. You can also use this similar term, like a boat moving through water has a term that looks like this. The water kind of is proportional to the velocity, the force, the drag forces on a boat in water.
How would I physically make one? Would I just have some pipe and some water flow? Could I do that?
So you can make a syringe. With the end plug is a damper, or a small orifice is a damper.
Okay.
Right. Other questions? All right, that's it.